This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. When we talk about protecting open space in Connecticut, as we recently did, a lot of the focus is, rightly, on finding ways to protect farms and forest land. But another way to do this starts on the other end, preserving the existing infrastructure in our communities. No need to build on green space when you're rebuilding in the town center, right? And many of our region's towns and cities, well, the biggest industrial sites that could be preserved and developed are old industrial plants and mills. Towns like Collinsville and its iconic Axe Factory are defined by the mills at the center of town. If smartly redeveloped with housing, small business, even new types of manufacturing, these buildings can be brought back to life. And one of the best uses of the high-ceilinged, brick-walled structures filled with light, well, it's art. Lots of it. Artist residences and working studios, gallery and performance spaces. Sadly, though, for every success story, hundreds of other old mills take up huge amounts of space in their towns and cities. Slowly, they're decaying, sometimes being claimed by fire. Today, Where We Live, we'll peek inside the history of our industrial past and find out how creative entrepreneurs are reclaiming these spaces from Willington to Winsted to Willimantic to Wassaic, New York. What old mills and factories are found in your town? Do you have a project that you're working on? Call us at 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. A bit later on, we'll also talk to the author of Abandoned America, The Age of Consequences. It's a photographic collection of deserted sites across the U.S. Joining us for our New Haven studios today is Renee Trebert, who's project manager for Making Places. It's a program of the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation. Renee, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And joining us also is Wes Haynes, who is a project director for Making Places. And Wes, thank you so much for joining us as well.
You're welcome, John.
In the studio with us is our friend Ellen Grisadick. She's an artist and she's the president of the American Mural Project. We'll be talking more about this project that we've been trying to keep track of for the last few years here at Where We Live. This is something that's happening in an old mill right in my hometown of Winsted. Ellen, it's good to see you.
It's great to see you, John.
So first of all, Renee and Wes, maybe you can just give us a little bit of an inventory. We were talking on the phone before this program about the numbers of historic mills and factories. It kind of shocked me how many are out there. Tell us about what you're finding as far as the inventory.
Yes, well, we've started our inventory kind of working with one that was done back in 1980-81 by Matthew Roth and company, and that identified some 200 industrial properties in the state, and we've been building upon that. We're now coming up with figures on the order of 1,000 surviving mill structures. Unfortunately, we've also identified since the mid-20th century about 800 lost industrial facilities. And that's across about 127 towns in the state.
So I assume that many of these facilities are still doing some of the same things or the sorts of same things that they were doing 100 years ago, or is most of the industry left?
Well, we've had a lot of attrition of industry in these properties. A lot of them are empty. A lot of them are underutilized. There may be some low-level industrial production with mixed use, retail, and things like that. What we are finding is that there are a lot of opportunities for getting new life into these buildings that are just sitting there in the landscape. The industrial base, though, in some areas is very active. Stafford Springs is seeing a rebirth of the woolen industry that is really quite extraordinary. The buildings, the woolen industry went out of the buildings and has come back into the buildings, so that's really great.
So there is still some industrial use. We're going to be talking about the other uses that are there. I mean, what are some of the big projects that people are trying to do, Renee? Because I think mixed use is the key, right? You can't really have a manufacturer that's going to take up thousands and thousands of industrial feet of industrial space in a downtown center anymore. Now it's probably got to be a bunch of different things in there.
Yeah, what we see traditionally, one of the things that's occurred is residential use because it's a formula that works very well in some of these industrial spaces, and there are also some incentives for that. But we also see commercial uses. There are some mills where you get a variety of smaller industrial uses in there, small manufacturing uses, and of course the artist uses that you're talking about, cultural spaces. Really, there's a broad variety of things that people are turning to try and put these mill sites back into active use.
One of the things I want to talk to the both of you about is ways in which the state or the Trust for Historic Preservation might be involved, ways in which you can start to get funding together to see a space as more than just a dream. But I think a part of what we need to talk about, Wes, is just the psychology around this. In towns that have had mills for 200 years that loom up over the town center, quite often, and I'll speak for my hometown of Winsted, they are seen by many residents as an eyesore. They're there and that you watch them crumble by the moment. And it's hard to turn around that psychological frame that says this can be something other than just an eyesore in the center of town.
Yes, you hit the nail on the head, John, because I think if you scratch the surface of any Connecticut resident who's been here one or more generations, somebody has a connection with that mill, and it is an emotional attachment. It may be negative because maybe the mill went out during somebody's relative's work period there, and they still have hard feelings about it, and maybe the town has given up hope on it. But I have to say that this governor is making an enormous effort and gets this problem pretty well. And Commissioner Catherine Smith of the Department of Economic and Community Development, or DECD, is really trying to attract investment in Connecticut towns and understands fundamentally that these mills are basically barriers to economic development, and that you just can't leave them standing there, and something has to be done. So DECD has taken a very proactive approach on this. Deputy Commissioner Tim Sullivan is tasked with the job of actually doing that, implementing that on the ground. The state has already invested about $125 million in grant and loan funding to help these buildings turn around. And right now they have over 100 open projects on their boards.
If you have a project that you're interested in your town, something that is ongoing that you'd like to talk a little bit about, or maybe there's a gigantic mill building in your community that you'd like to see redeveloped, give us a call at 860-275-7266. Let me turn to Ellen Grizadik, who has been bringing the American Mural Project to one of the mill buildings in Winsted, and there are so many of them. Ellen, first of all, why did you choose the space at the Whiting Mills complex in Winsted?
Well, it was a period of, I think, more than a year of searching all the way from Lowell, Massachusetts, all the way through Connecticut. My project, the American Mural Project, is a tribute to people who've worked in this country. It's going to be the world's largest collaborative mural when it's finished. So one thing we needed was a big space. Number two, I wanted to put it in a place where work was done. For me, this is a personal thing, but every time we lose one of these mill buildings, we lose our future, our past. And these are America's cathedrals. In our young history, these are the buildings that are going to tell the story about America, and it's a tragedy every time we lose one. Plus the fact, when you're standing in one of these old mill buildings, it exudes the work that was done and the history that was there. Why would you put a Butler building up when this thing is so beautiful? You'll never be able to build them again. And so we must really try. I feel as if we make an example of this and it becomes a museum to sustainability in the way that it's done, then what we're doing is we're creating something that's an example for others.
Mm. Well, I was just at Open Artist Studios at Whiting Mills in Winsted over this past weekend, and as you talk about that, I can imagine in my mind the various things that were done on the floors. You see a stain in the floor, or you see a crack in the wall, and it tells a story about the work that was done there in the generation upon generations of people who were standing on that same floor as us while I'm, shopping for jewelry, and they were making something that we all needed, not just in Connecticut, but around the world.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I mean, I liken it to almost a religious experience being in these buildings. You go up into Whiting Mills proper. Our two buildings are more warehouse buildings, so they're not as evocative of that time. But you see those clerestory windows with the chain that drives that open them, and you almost feel like it's a spiritual experience. And I think that we've worked nationally with the Trust for Historic Preservation, and one of the most important things that they're telling me is if you can bring in those things that explain to other people how do we take these buildings and completely transform them into something that's efficient. And that's what we've got to learn to do with HVAC and everything we're doing in the buildings so that other people say, hey, I can take another building like that, and this doesn't have to drain me dry.
Renee, maybe you can talk about that, though, because I think that's one of the first things people look at. They see the amount of work, the amount of infrastructure that has to go into making one of these old buildings livable if it's a place to have apartments, workable if it's a place to display art. It seems as though maybe, looking from the outside, it's an insurmountable barrier to get HVAC in there and make it safe for everyone to work inside.
Well, perhaps not insurmountable, but certainly a challenge. And you're absolutely right that that's a big concern to people. But that's why the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation has this program, Making Places. We hope to provide information to municipalities, to developers, that would provide them with knowledge about the resources that may be available out there, and also to provide information about the variety of the mills that may be available for redevelopment out there. There are such a variety of programs from the Department of Economic and Community Development, as Wes mentioned. Our own program, we actually had a pilot program in which we were able to give planning grants out to mill owners to pursue a variety of market feasibility work and that kind of thing. So there are some resources out there.
I know you wanted to jump in, Ellen.
Well, the only thing I was going to say is the first problem you have is when you look at a building like this, if you're a future owner or you are the owner and you want to start to think about it and reuse, is your cleanup. I think that in so many cases that scares people off right of the way, because the minute you open up, it's like a can of worms. And until we make the brownfields easier for people so that they come in and they go, no, I'm not afraid to clean this up. And this is what happens with so many of these buildings. They're just left and left and left. There's a gorgeous mill building in Williamstown, and we went up and looked at that. And from the outside, it's absolutely perfect. You go inside, and because the town owned it and it started to have a roof leak, the water drained in, and all the floors were like the ocean. They were just waves. No one will touch it.
And, you know, so you've jump, got, jump
West,
in here, Ellen. You know, DECD has just announced in December its first round of historic brownfield remediation. And they awarded a number of projects to mills around the state to do exactly that, to clean up both hazardous materials that are found within the building, and the subsurface conditions address those, which vary depending on the industry that was there. And so there's no one suit fits all kind of situation, but they've awarded $2.2 million for that to encourage the redevelopment of mills, and it is the primary hurdle that one has to go through when addressing these properties. The getting the HVAC in the building at the end of the project is pretty easy in a mill, actually, that because the spaces lend themselves to a kind of an exposed system treatment that you wouldn't necessarily have in your own home if you lived in a colonial or colonial revival house.
I'm going to get to some phone calls here. 860-275-7266. Lynn is calling from Winchester Center. Hello there, Lynn.
Hi, John. Thought I'd tell you about my project. I'm putting together a calendar called Capturing Connecticut. It's my second year, and I'm working on 2016. And I feature things like farm-to-table, outdoor recreation, historic renovation, and the arts. And I was just at Whiting Mills yesterday, and so I'm working through getting all the permissions, but I hope to include Whiting Mills on the calendar for 2016. And just one note, my grandfather actually tended the boiler room in that factory, and so I visited that as a child. So I saw.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much for that. I appreciate you bringing that up. And that's part of the story, too, Ellen, right? You always have someone whose grandfather worked there, whose grandmother worked there. Can you tell us a little bit more about what's happening right now at Whiting Mills? It's a complex that has been growing over the course of years. There's a whole new artist swing, and there's some amazing art being done in there, but there's a variety of craftspeople, and they're taking up all this space, and it's sitting right there next to the space that you hope to develop into the American Mural Project.
Oh, yeah. It's so exciting. Whenever I'm down about, you know, you see, I've got to raise the roof 30 feet, and Governor Malloy and Catherine Smith are very much responsible for where we are right now on this. They've given us a $1 million challenge grant, and we're $800,000 towards the—we've got to raise $1.4. We're going to do it. But I think what's exciting is you go in there and you see a space that is basically restored, but you see all these craftspeople in there who are doing the things that were once done in there. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Joe, who was the custodian at Whiting Mills, on Saturday, and he was telling me where all the trams were and where all the – he knew absolutely everything. And you could see the light in his eyes as he got excited about the fact that people were back in those buildings and everything. Now, of course, it's peopled with all these great artists and craftspeople, businesses, and it's just alive with action. It's wonderful. It's so exciting.
We're talking with Ellen Grzydek, who's the artist and president of the American Mural Project, which she's raising money for to bring to Whiting Mills in Winsted, Connecticut, my hometown, so it's close to my heart. But there's a lot of these spaces around Connecticut and around the region we're going to be talking more about with Renee Trebert and Wes Haynes, who are from Making Places, a project of the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266 as we reclaim our industrial past here on Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today on the program, we're talking about reclaiming a bit of our industrial past, thousands of old mill buildings and factories dotted across Connecticut and around our region. Some of them are still in use with their original use, but many of them have fallen into disuse and disrepair. Some have been brought back to life by artists and entrepreneurs, people bringing in small business and restaurants. We're taking a little bit of a survey of what's going on with these beautiful old buildings, trying to preserve them with Renee Trebert and Wes Haynes, who are from Making Places, a program of the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation. They join us today from our New Haven studios. Joining us in studio here in Hartford is Ellen Grzydek, who's the president of the American Mural Project, the artist who is putting together this project at Whiting Mills in Winsted. We're getting some more phone calls at 860-275-7266. Let's go to Stephen. I think this is Stephen Holmes, our friend from West Hartford. Hi, Stephen.
How are you doing, John?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I mean, you and I have talked about this in the past, how Connecticut has a real strength in terms of its proximity to major art centers like Boston and New York. At the same time, we have lots and lots of these mills and industrial buildings that, I have to say, in other states have already been developed. We're kind of behind, I think, in this. And one of the problems I always have in my conversations around this topic is with people either in the city or in the state government that you're looking to partner with that can't really comprehend what it is you're proposing to do. And we're constantly having to say, well, look at Mass MoCA in Massachusetts, or look at Bia Beacon, or look at Hudson, New York. And we have all of those resources here. One of the things I would throw to your guests as an idea to bounce off of is a model that I was involved with in Miami in the design district, beginning with Art Basel Miami Beach in 2002. And that is not thinking so meta that you have to take a building and completely build it out for this purpose from the get-go, but taking buildings as they are available and where they are available and doing short-term hit-and-run exhibitions, so to speak. And what we were able to do in the design district in Miami, in particular in Wynwood, is activate buildings maybe just for 3 months, maybe just for 2 weeks. And it allowed civic leaders, community leaders, business people, real estate people to actually see what it is you're talking about, rather than having to imagine what it is you're talking about. Is there a way you can do that in Connecticut?
I think that, well, first of all, it's a great point, Stephen. I'll ask you first, Ellen, but I want to get some thoughts from our guests at the Connecticut Trust as well. But that's part of just activating a space, because you were nodding your head. You've been able to convince over time some state funding, but at the end of the day, seeing is believing. If people can see what it is, then maybe they're going to want to invest in it differently.
Well, I think in my case, it's been really difficult because I'm asking people to imagine something that is in their world. I mean, 5 stories high worth of art, 120 feet long. You know, it's hard to grasp. But we have finally gotten there. First, we started with John Larson. John Larson got on our side, and Senator Murphy got on our side. They have been fighting for it for, I'm going to say 5 years this started, that far back. Last year, Governor Malloy comes to the mill. He sees the project. he starts to get interested. Catherine Smith very much behind it. We're starting to get there. Now, yes, I would agree with, was it Stephen, your caller,
yeah,
that you've got a situation where it frustrates me to no end to go up and talk to Joe Thompson about this, and he'll say, you know, we'll give you space up here. And, you know, you sit there and you go, we've just got to get Connecticut to understand what this is going to be as an economic impact. You know,
when you talk with about Joe Thompson, this is up in Massmoka,
the developer
of this amazing mill project that just keeps expanding and expanding in North Adams, Massachusetts. We've talked about it. It's not the only model, but it's one of the shining lights in the Northeast, certainly.
Well, and Joe has been great because I'm doing a mini Massmoka for sure. I mean, our two buildings are nothing compared to that giant complex. But the same thing is true. You walk around Massmoka, and part of the art is where you are, the sense of place. And I know that Renee and Wes can talk about this forever because that's what they're seeing every day with these buildings. And how do we use them, and how do we give this sense? Because every time you're going to attract people to these places, you're going to bring in tourists from across the country. This is something that I think is hard for some people to grasp.
I'm wondering, Wes and Renee, if you can tackle the two parts of what Stephen had for us. One is that showing people the vision of what it could be, and then also that idea of short-term activation, about getting something at least so that we can see what art or music or something might look like in a space that's just been, you know, abandoned for years.
Yeah, the, you know, artists were the first colonizers in the post-industrial era. When the industries left a community in Connecticut, often the artists got in there. And we're seeing properties now that had been inhabited by as live workspace by artists back in the 70s that are now no longer occupied by them. The city may have closed them down because of substandard housing issues. You know, it's also difficult to get financing, commercial financing for those kind of activities to do kind of one-shot pop-up exhibitions. But I agree completely with Stephen that just getting the lights on in these buildings is a big psychological boost, even for a couple of weeks, so people can start to perceive them as not just negative dark spaces, kind of scary places to get near at night, but places that are attraction. And, you know, the artists, the great thing about mills is that they are cheap space. And artists usually don't require a heavily finished building to do their thing. We have an abundance of that. And Renee and I have been through so many properties in Connecticut that are pretty scary to go in. I mean, there are brownfield cleanup wells going on at the same time. And it's kind of hard to get people in safely to some of those places. The floors are unstable. They're fixable, but they're unstable at this point. So I think, you know, doing it strategically, I know that we've been working very closely in Georgetown, in a little industrial village within the town of Reading. An artist up there, Jane Philbrick, has a vision for that property that is really quite extraordinary for agriculture and art. And it could be a wonderful build out, but the project is so deep underwater financially right now that we're probably 5 years away from anybody even starting to do anything but patching the roof. Getting the lights on is out of the question at this point, unfortunately.
And of course, patching the roof and making sure that it doesn't sustain any more damage is a big part of the problem. We're going to get to some more phone calls in just a moment, and I want to get back to our guests in New Haven. But I quickly want to bring in somebody whose project somewhat splits the difference between permanent occupancy of a space and short term use. Jeff Barnett Winsby is co-executive director of the Wasaic Project. This is a project that happens in a farm and in an old grain elevator in the tiny little town of Wasaic, New York. Wasaic, many people who ride Metro North, they may know as the northernmost terminus of the Harlem Line, and it's way out there, in some cases, in the middle of nowhere, but there's this vibrant art scene happening. And Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm wondering if you can explain what the Wasaic Project is first.
First and foremost, it took one of these buildings that you all are talking about, and it started to occupy it in a very seasonal way and temporary way. But ultimately what has happened is the community has rallied around this and been so excited once they've seen the activity that they've really helped us support and expand our season, and now we're looking at a year-round season starting next year. So this is education, tourism, cultural capital building, and excitement just in general. It's been incredible. It's been for 8 years now.
The main space you use is the old Maxon Mills building. This is not an industrial site like many of the ones we're talking about. This is an old grain elevator, and it has a historic resonance, certainly for that part of the world, but it's also an amazing structure, Jeff. Maybe you can just describe it.
So it's a 7-story grain elevator. It was falling down. It's been slightly rehabilitated structurally, but inside is still very raw. The actual grain silos are made from stacked 2x6s, and it's something that you see quite a bit more in Wyoming, Montana, and those areas, not the sort of concrete silos, but these old wooden silos. But they're very rare on the East Coast, partially because a lot of them burned.
Mm. And it's a place that inside, unlike some of the spaces that we were just talking about, that may need minor retrofits in order for artists to go in there and just work in raw spaces. You actually had to build floors up 7 floors of a grain elevator. I mean, there normally wouldn't be floors there. So you've had to do a lot of construction inside to be able to present art in there.
True. We cut into the grain silos and built floors. And currently, even though it's a large space to see art, and normally we show between 70 and 100 artists at a show, we're still in only about 30% of the space.
Mm. And so inside this town, there's a few other spaces you occupy that you've activated, including just a little restaurant around the corner. I think it's one of the important things to tell a story, Jeff, about places like this. When we talk about North Adams, Massachusetts, Mass Mocha is great, but without some other investment of people putting money into restaurants and hotels, you couldn't really have the vibrancy around there. You're activating a little restaurant space in town, and that helps this very, very small community understand what your project's all about.
It's true. It's our ability to speak about what's going on year-round. Because my wife and I, who's also a co-executive director at the Wasaic Project, run this restaurant, we're in there physically speaking to people all the time. And it gives them an opportunity to ask us questions. As everyone knows, small towns are full of rumors, and this has been one of the best PR engines for us to just be honest about what's going on and also listen a fair amount. So it allows us to sort of continue this work outside of a space that isn't maybe ideal for year-round occupation.
Ellen, did you want to jump in?
Well, I just to say that Jeff and I know each other, but I've been several times when they have the big events of the summer, and it's so exciting. I highly recommend everybody go to Wasaic and see this. One of the wonderful things about it, and this is true with Mass Mocha too, if you go, is they have made this possible for you to climb that grain elevator to the very top with the, what is it, Jeff, a chute up there that is the old grain chute? I mean,
we install work in it. We try and reward you with a nice big installation at the top. It's quite a climb.
it's what it really does to me. This is the wonderful thing about these great old places is they raise the bar for the artist because the place is so magnificent that you go, oh my God, look at that, you know, and you're sitting next, you're also comparing it to the art that's around it. And it's a wonderful marriage of new and old, and you know, everything is so evocative of things that are physical and big and wonderful. So I mean, I can't congratulate the two of you enough for what you've done, because you know, anyone who takes this on, it has to be from passion, and it's a labor of love, because and I've been on this project 15 years, and these two have been what was it, 8 years that
it's
Jeff
eight
is
years. Yeah, yep.
These are not something you take on. This is not for the faint of heart. You have to say, when everybody says, oh, that'll never work, you got to say, yes, it will. Yes, it will. And you got to keep saying it. And until people, I mean, finally, Congressman Larson said she's not going away. Like, so something's going to have to be done here. And that is really what happened. And I mean, Malloy used to run when he'd see me coming, you know, but now we're buddies, you know. And I think what's happening is, in the end, you have to believe in it so strongly that others start to come on and say, I want to be part of what Ellen's doing or what Jeff is doing. And this is, I think, what Connecticut can make happen for them in a big way.
Jeff, have you been able to get Governor Cuomo to come out?
I haven't, actually. We're working on another project a little bit further south, still in Wasaic, and we're trying to get his help in redeveloping a former mental health institution. And we think that that is a key economic engine for this community. And so we're trying to leverage the Wasaic Project and use all of this to prove that there's real hope for this area and that people in this community really deserve the benefits of seeing these areas redeveloped. We're working on it.
Very, very quickly, if people want to experience this over the summer, you've got a new show that opens next week, and then you've got a big festival in August. Can you just quickly tell us about those?
Yeah, the show opens June 14th, and it's open until September 20th. The big festival is July 31st, August 1st and 2nd, and that festival is free. You can find out more about what's happening at that festival at wasaicproject.org. If you have children and you're interested in any arts education opportunities, we have a whole section of art events catered towards children, which you can find right on our website as well.
Jeff Barnett-Winsby is co-executive director of the Wasaic Project. I was just out there visiting their building yesterday, and it's an amazing place. I wish you all the best, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
I want to bring in Tom Buccino, who's manager of the Millworks in Willington, Connecticut, another one of the projects that we're so excited about here in the state. And Tom, welcome to the program. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John. I appreciate the opportunity.
So, Tom, tell us about the Millworks. What is it you're doing there, and what's the space?
Well, it's interesting to hear what others are saying, and particularly the most recent comment that Ellen made with regard to passion. And I think that's really what it's about. Let me answer your question. The space is actually a historic mill, and it originally operated as a Gardner Hall Jr. company established in 1860, ran as a spool thread mill through 1954, purchased by a development company, and then my parents purchased the facility in 1962. So it's been in our family for over 50 years, and that's where that emotional connection, I think, really plays a part, whether good or bad. But that sometimes gets in the way of business decisions.
So what's happening right there now, and where do you hope to take it?
Well, currently we have a number of small businesses, entrepreneurs, and fine artists here that make up our community. I think our long-term vision really is to create a cultural destination to serve northeastern Connecticut and hopefully beyond that. We've got a number of things in the works right now. We have been fortunate enough to have a small group of folks join us as the Friends of the Millworks to help support historic preservation, as well as to help further develop our community here. And they operate under fiscal agreement with Wyndham Arts and Willimantic. They have established a museum on the premises, which really speaks to its founder, the Gardner Hall Jr. Company. We're in the process of launching a performance venue with programming to support music, dance, film, literature, and the visual arts, and plan to hopefully develop a gallery on site as well.
So what are the big challenges you're facing right now?
Well, the big challenges are brick and mortar. You could probably identify a capital project here on a daily basis if you tried to. We're talking about historic preservation issues, roof replacement, brick pointing HVAC systems, structural issues, and certainly most recently, the state has initiated new legislation with regard to dam safety, which impacts us as well, because we do have a dam on the site.
Mm. So, Renee and Wes, obviously, you can sympathize with what Tom's talking about. What's out there to help developers like him, people who are trying to make a go of it and keep not only these family operations in some cases alive, but redevelop these spaces that are so costly to maintain?
Well, I know Tom. Hi, Tom. And we've been working together with him on that dam project. We gave him a small grant to bring in a consultant to address some of the needs of the dam and comply with the new state regs. But DECD is a really good resource for that, and our program is an ongoing resource. We've been working with Tom, too, to develop a scope of consulting services. Making Places at the Connecticut Trust has on board a retainer of experts that we can loan out to projects like this. And we're in negotiations right now on helping Tom out with the next hurdle he needs to come over. But Tom is a really rare person who's had this association with this building for a long, long time, feels very, very deeply connected to it. And he's doing wonderful things out there. He's the guy that needs to make sure that the boiler fires up, collect the rent checks from the tenants. It's a pretty difficult situation, and he's alone. But Tom, I think, understands that at least we're behind him, and DEC is starting to get into the game, too.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining us and spending some time talking about the Millworks project. If people want to find out more about what you do there, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, our website is themillworks.us, and phone contact is 518-791-9474.
And we'll put some more information up on our website, wnpr.org/where we live. Tom Buccino, manager of the Millworks in Wellington, Connecticut. Best of luck with all of your projects, Tom. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Before we take a break, let's go to a few more phone calls here. Patrick's calling from Hartford as we talk about old industrial spaces being brought back to life. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good. What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the project that we're working on here in the north end of Hartford. We've worked with the Historic Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation on this project. I've met with Renee in the past. Hey, Renee.
Hi.
So the Swift Factory is a former Gold Leaf manufacturing facility up at the corner of Garden and Westland Street. It was started by Matthew Swift in 1887. And the buildings on the site, which include a factory and two historic properties, two historic homes, built up over the kind of ensuing 50 to 60 years. And so what's really interesting for me as an architect is that within this one site, you have 50 years of building technology, from traditional kind of joist frame construction to heavy timber construction to kind of concrete and steel construction. So as you kind of walk around, you can kind of trace the architectural technology progression, and also it kind of tells the story of the industrial process, where things started in small spaces done by hand to larger spaces done by larger machines to kind of assembly lines, you know, in the kind of latter part of the 20th century.
And what are you hoping, Patrick, quickly, what are you hoping this space becomes in your ultimate vision?
So the fact we're a nonprofit. The factory was donated to us by the Swift Factory, and we're hoping to use it as to create jobs and improve health in the community. At a tight, it employed around 400 people and was a real economic engine for the community. And the north end of Hartford, which was just recently designated as a promise zone, is one of the more economically underprivileged neighborhoods in the state. And so we're hoping to transform this building and in doing so help transform the neighborhood through agriculture, food, and health. We have a farm on the property. Hartford Food Systems have been growing here this is their fifth year, and their CSA kind of pickup is starting next week. We're talking to kind of local businesses and nonprofits about relocating here on food. We partnered with Hartford Food Systems, Billings Forge, and Reset, the social enterprise trust, on the recent SC2 grant competition, and we came second in that. And so that was around kind of creating kind of opportunities for food entrepreneurs to have space to grow and learn.
Well, and Patrick, I'm just going to cut in for a moment, just because we have some other phone callers, and I thank you so much for sharing that, and also sharing the way in which you work with others. We've talked about Billings Forge, the enormous project that has taken such a big role in the redevelopment of one neighborhood in Hartford. So I appreciate you bringing those together. Renee, do you have a quick comment on these? We've talked in some ways a lot about small towns that are outside the major cities. But there are some city infrastructure plans, whether it's Hartford, Bridgeport. Some of these factory spaces take up an awful lot of square footage in cities that sometimes need an awful lot of help. Is there a different story for the cities, Renee?
I'm actually going to punt to Wes on this one.
Yeah, I think Patrick brings up Swift, which is a really great project. To point out that these projects, as you said, Billings originated back in the 80s. It's still perhaps a work in progress in some aspects. And up in the north end of Bridgeport, Swift is about 5 years into the process now. The trust helped them out early on in terms of bringing in a consultant to do an overall conditions assessment of the building. And DECD has just given them a grant to replace the roof, actually. So these projects take years to develop, and people like Patrick have the patience and the vision to move the ball forward. And I think that in the urban areas, that's very key. I mean, you have a lot of these industrial properties that are all competing for the same pool of money. You know, we can only give planning money. DECD can give some build-out money. But the people that are actually making the decisions on them, like Ellen, need to come up with the vision for the uses of them, and we can help them out as much as we can.
We're talking about industrial spaces in Connecticut that are being reclaimed for new uses, from art to housing. You can join us at 860-275-7266. When we come back, we're going to talk to a photographer whose book, Abandon America, The Age of Consequences, takes a look at what can happen when these spaces are not reclaimed. That's coming up next, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's The Wheelhouse, our weekly news roundtable. We'll recap the state legislative session that came to perhaps a soft thud last week. Unless you're in the business community, a lot of people were up in arms about our budget. We'll be talking about that coming up on tomorrow's Where We Live. Hope you can join us. Today, we're talking about reclaiming industrial architecture, some of the great mill buildings, hundreds of them, maybe thousands of them in our region, trying to find new uses for them, including the arts. We're in studio with Ellen Grizadik, who's an artist and president of the American Mural Project, which she hopes to bring soon to Whiting Mills in Winsted, Connecticut. Also, Wes Haynes and Renee Trebert from the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation. Joining us by phone now is Matthew Christopher. Matthew is an artist, a photographer, whose book, Abandon America, The Age of Consequences, takes a very close look at what can happen when these spaces are abandoned. And Matthew, first of all, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, John. It's a pleasure.
Why did you take on this project?
Well, actually, I got interested in it with the loss of the state hospitals. I was really interested in kind of the background of institutional care, because that was what I had worked in. And as I'm sure many people would be aware, the buildings are kind of vanishing, and they have a very unique architecture, and they really kind of define the communities around them. And so starting from that point, I then kind of got interested in other abandoned facilities that were around, and that went from factories to schools to churches to pretty much anything. And I think that idea of places that kind of define their communities and their loss is really what's kind of motivated my work.
And I know, Ellen Grizadik, this is a book that you have, that you know, and it's something that's been inspirational in ways to you.
Yeah. Hi, Matthew. I love this book. And I think you, in your introduction, the last two paragraphs where you describe what we've actually done as a nation and the consequences we're paying, it's so vivid when you look at these photographs and you want to cry, because we will never build these buildings again. They're so grand and they're so wonderful, and they're all in decay. What have we done to cause this? And it really, it does sort of ask the question, you know, what are we doing as a society where this kind of waste occurs when these wonderful buildings are just going? But I congratulate you, and I think what we've been talking about this morning, you know, with a lot of people with a lot of passion who want to save these buildings, is it comes to my mind that as I hear Jeff or Peter or any of these people calling in, I'm like, we should form a club of people who are crazy and trying to save these buildings. And you can be part of it, Matthew, because you're certainly right there with us. And I think it would be very powerful to see how different people did it and to work together, because one of the things that I'm doing on the American Mural Project, working with all these kids across the country, is we realize when we work together how powerful and strong we are together, and the things we can do together that we couldn't possibly do by ourselves.
Well, I'm wondering, Matthew, do you feel like you're an advocate joining with the other people who are redeveloping some of these spaces with the thing that you're trying to do with your book?
Absolutely, and thank you very much for the kind words, Ellen. I'd love to talk with you more about that in the future. I mean, I'm always looking to kind of link up with people that are fighting the good fight, so to speak, and, you know, trying to reincorporate these into the fabric of the communities around them rather than just sort of treat them like they're garbage. I mean, I think that's one of the things that my book is hoping to address, is the fact that these really aren't sort of disposable things. They're things that are the places that are there for a moment, and then when you destroy them, they're gone. And construction techniques have moved on. I mean, as a society, I think the idea of, you know, for example, in Pennsylvania, you know, being kind of the economy being defined by coal, steel, and textiles. I mean, those days have changed for better or for worse. And being able to save the pieces of the communities that, you know, kind of founded them, I think is really important. So absolutely. I mean, I'm always looking to link up with groups that are interested in preserving the places, kind of laud their efforts and advocate for, you know, basically reuse and remediation rather than just destruction, demolition. And I think that, you know, overall in the book, I did include some places that were successfully reused because I didn't want it to be just a sort of doom and gloom thing. But certainly with the work that I do, so many of the places are torn down, and it's really heartbreaking for a lot of people.
Among the places that Matthew chronicles in his book, Abandon America, The Age of Consequences, is Norwich State Hospital in Connecticut. There are so many evocative pictures in here, and it does tell a story about this industrial past. Growing up in the shadows of some of those steel buildings in Pennsylvania, Matthew, I certainly do sympathize, and this resonates with me. The book, again, is Abandon America, The Age of Consequences. Thank you so much, Matthew Christopher, for joining us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much, John.
I want to get to David, who's calling from Storrs. Quickly, David, go ahead. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, I live in Storrs, and there's a great example of a real success story with a renovation of an old mill. It's the Kirby Mills in Mansfield Hollow. I actually worked in the building for the past 7 years. It was purchased, I think, in the 80s by an entrepreneur couple, Sam and Michelle Schifrin. They had an automated machine business that they ran out of it, which in the recent past wasn't doing well. So they shifted gears and decided to actually reintroduce hydropower to the building because the original water raceway from Mansfield Hollow was there. And it's been a huge success. They've got a 500-kilowatt power station that powers the building and like 250 homes nearby.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much, David, for hanging on the line and for getting that in as well. We're getting a tweet from Joanna, who's waiting for someone to mention Stonington's Velvet Mill, a very cool use of an old mill space for art, shopping, and food. And our friend Susan Bigelow wants to mention Bigelow Commons in Enfield, where she once confusingly lived, named after her. Renee and Wes, very quickly, if people are in a town and they want to do something with one of these spaces, whether they own it and they don't know what to do with it, or they see it as an eyesore and they're like, we need to make this happen in our town, what do they do?
Well, you start with the public process, going to the municipality and letting your elected officials know that you're concerned about this. We have a presentation that we take. It's a portable presentation we take around the state. It's called Got Mill, and it's basically for anyone who has got a mill and doesn't really know what to do with it. And it has a number of successful case studies that kind of demystify the process and show that what the buildings look like before, which may be abandoned and really kind of scruffy, as Matthew's images evoke, or what they can do and the wide variety of uses you can try in them. So if organize, contact your elected officials and contact the trust, and we'll try to come out and help you.
And we'll put information on our website, wnpr.org/where we live, for the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation. They're Making Places Project. Wes Haynes and Renee Trebert joined us today from New Haven Studios at WNPR. Thank you so much both for joining us. I really appreciate it.
It was a real pleasure, John. Thanks.
And Ellen Grisidick, if people want to get involved with the American Mural Project, you're still raising money, you're hoping to get this launched in my hometown of Winsted, what do they do?
Well, go to our website. And that's AmericanMuralProject.org, and spread the word. We're going to do this, and whatever they can contribute in time, ideas, but mainly, obviously, we need the dollars. But we're going to do it. We're going to do it. We've got everybody behind us. And I think what's happened in this hour of talking about this is you see, you know, this is regrettable. And Wes mentioned the fact that these buildings seem kind of scary to people, but they're not. They're absolutely the last testament of a time that's gone. And what do we say to our kids when those places are gone?
And I have to say, and you've mentioned this a few times, buildings like these built 100 or 200 years ago, they will never be built like that again. It will never, ever be around even one more minute if they fall to the ground or if they burn to the ground, and we hope to preserve as many of them as we can. Ellen Grisidick, great to see you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
Again, the American Mural Project is something that we'll have links to on our website, WNPR.org. Today's program produced by Lydia Brown, Tucker Ives, Betsy Kaplan, Kion Wolf, Heather Brandon, our digital editor, Katie Tolarski, our executive producer. I'm John Dankosky. Thank you so much for listening to Where We Live.